Welcome to everyone. Let's call the Senate Labor and Commerce meeting to order. Let the record reflect it's approximately 10 minutes after 1 on March 9, 2009. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum present. Our Senator Thomas to my right and to my left, Senator Bundy and Senator Davis, and myself, Senator Pascvan. The purpose of our meeting today is to take up the following legislation. First, Senate Bill 187 relating to mortgage lending regulation. Second, there's a committee substitute for House Bill 129. It relates to the power to revoke real estate licenses. Third is Senate Bill 12 relating to limiting overtime for registered nurses. Fourth, committee substitute for Senate Bill 61 relates to mandatory universal health insurance. Number five is Senate Bill 153 relating to manufactured homes as real property. And lastly, number six, there's a committee substitute for Senate Bill 126 relates to reemployment of retirees and exempt service. And I thank everyone for joining us here today. We do have six bills on the agenda and hope to move efficiently through that. It is my intent to hear Senate Bill 187 and the committee substitute for House Bill 129 quickly, and to a lot of work has been done on these bills, and it is my intent to hear and move those bills out, and then we'll see, depending on how it goes, where we get to. But anyway, if we could begin with Lori Hovanec, if she could present Senate Bill 187 relating to mortgage lending regulation. And please state your name and your appropriate information and provide your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I am Lori Hovanec. I'm the director for the Division of Banking and Securities, which administers Alaska's mortgage lending law. And I'm here to certainly support this bill, which helps to bring the state into compliance with federal law. Part of the bringing our statutes into compliance with federal law is authorizing the division to participate in the National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry. And this bill is put forward for that purpose. It authorizes the participation in this national system and registry, and it allows the department to adopt emergency regulations to comply and institute this participation. And primarily, the regulations that will need to be changed will involve the collection of fees from licensees to participate in the NMLS system through this federal database, and also to allow applicants to send their background checks, fingerprint cards, through the NMLS system. Right now, our statutes state that those have to be provided to the department. So those are some of the changes that we'll be making in our regulation package. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I guess, is it the intent of this legislation to comply with the federal law with respect to mortgage licensing and mortgage brokers? Is that ultimately the intent?
Yes, the Federal SAFE Act requires that all states comply with this federal law by July 30th of this year. So this is just part of that compliance, is that we participate in this mortgage licensing system.
Is the administration supportive of this process?
Yes, entirely supportive. And we're, in fact, we have an implementation plan, and we're prepared to join on August 1st.
Right. And there is a fiscal note, and I believe the fee to join this national organization is $50,000. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
So if you could just briefly explain kind of what costs are associated with this
The one-time fee to participate is based on the number of licensees, and we anticipate that we'll fall under the minimum fee, which is the $50,000. There's an additional $20,000 that we may not need all of that amount, but that's what's estimated to bring our systems, to upgrade them in order to interface with the national mortgage licensing systems there. And then there's a training component for staff.
Thank you. Senator Bundy?
Thank you. Two questions, Larry.
Yes.
One regarding this. It's been the practice of the state that the cost of a license should approximately be a break-even deal. The cost of the licensee should be approximately break-even. And will that be the case, even though this $50,000 is a one-time fee?
Yeah, Senator Bundy, through the chair, that's the case.
Okay. And the second question, I might, Mr. Chairman, and that is, you're comfortable that all licensees will be licensed in a timely fashion, and this won't keep people from doing business?
No, Senator Bundy, through the chair. In fact, if we were to delay this and take it up in a larger bill that's being contemplated, that would make it even harder for licensees to become licensed in time. This way, we're allowing them to transition in a little bit earlier. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Any further questions for Ms. Hovannik? Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hovannik, is this a reaction somewhat to what took place with all the loans that were made, subprime loans and all of the others, as well as some of the processes that even some of the mortgage companies were doing, where they were licensing people as insurance salespeople, but they were also operating as mortgage lenders in that same building, that kind of thing?
Yes, Senator Thomas, through the chair, this is entirely a reaction to trying to make the whole licensing process and collection of information about licensees more transparent.
Is there, if I may, Mr. Chairman, is there anything that qualifies us for if we do it, or disqualifies us from if we don't do it?
Just Senator Thomas, through the chair, if we do not comply with this, then there's under the federal law, HUD is required to come in and take over our mortgage licensing in Alaska.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any further questions for Ms. Hovannik? Thank you very much for the information that you provided with us. We do have one person, Mr. John Martin, at the Anchorage LIO, I believe. Mr. Martin, are you there?
I am here. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am John Martin, the president of the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers. Our organization, along with the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association, worked closely with the Division of Banking and Securities to get our existing mortgage licensing law passed several years ago. It was passed unanimously in the House and the Senate. Since that time, the federal government has passed the Safe and Fair Enforcement Act, referred to as the SAFE Act, which pertains to mortgage licensing. It sets the minimum standards all states must comply with by July 31st, 2009. If the standards are not met in time, HUD has the authority to grant an extension to the states based on their good faith efforts to comply with the SAFE Act. Recently, legislation was introduced to conform to the SAFE Act, your Senate Bill 149. That legislation has undergone changes with more to come. There's not enough time in this legislation period to iron it all out. Consequently, we will be working closely with the department and the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association to finalize the language. During the interim, the state can apply for an exemption from HUD in regards to the SAFE Act based upon pending legislation, the fact that our present statute substantially already complies with the SAFE Act, and by joining in the NMLSR, or the National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry. This particular bill today will grant the state the necessary authority to join the NMLSR, and once signed into law, will help Alaska get closer to compliance. I would urge you to expedite this bill, pass it out of committee, so the state can meet their target date for joining the NMLSR on August 1, 2009, as per their letter of intent. I thank you for your consideration and attention to this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Any questions of Mr. Martin by any committee? Seeing no questions, I do note that we have Luann Wyrock, Department of Law, and Julia Coster, Anchorage, also with the Department of Law, available for questions, or Patrice Walsh, Division of Banking, if there are any questions. Seeing none, we will close. I'll just ask, is there anyone here that would like to speak to Senate Bill 187, the mortgage lending? Seeing none, we will close public testimony, and I would receive a motion with respect to Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 187 be moved to from the committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. Backslash version black backslash A, I believe, is.
Yes. That's yes. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, we will take a brief at ease while we... We will call Labor and Commerce back to order. I would like to recognize Senator Meyer. He has arrived. He was here and participated in the discussion on Senate Bill 187, so want to make sure that that is well known. And we're also pleased to have with us and welcome Representative Ramirez. We're pleased that he is here. And if he could come forward, please, and speak to the committee substitute for House Bill 129 relating to licensing revocations with respect to the real estate field.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jay Ramirez, District 10. I'm very happy to be here and be in front of my senator. I'm pretty excited.
He's speechless.
I say nothing.
Through the chair, Senator Davis, you should have heard what I was thinking.
Doesn't take much to excite him.
Anyway, this is a very simple bill, and I'm happy to be here before the committee, but I would rather have Margaret Dowling present it. I just wanted to show deference to the committee and come up here. So it's nice to see you all.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome anytime, Representative Ramirez. Please state your name and identify affiliations and provide your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Dowling, and I am staff to Representative Ramirez. At the outset, I'd like to just point out that Gail Horetsky is here to answer any questions that you may have. She is in the Commercial and Fair Business section, which is the section that assists boards and commissions. Also, I believe online we have Sharon Walsh, who is with the Real Estate Commission, and she's prepared as well to answer questions. House Bill 129 makes a simple but needed correction to the existing law. Under the current law, the Alaska Real Estate Commission must revoke the license of a real estate broker or an associate broker if that person has been convicted of forgery, theft, extortion, conspiracy to defraud creditors, or fraud. They can also refuse to grant a license, or they can deny renewal of a license. Unfortunately, that law does not apply to salespeople. And currently, salespeople in Alaska number about 1,460. There are only associate brokers, there's only 411, and there are only 483 brokers. So that's quite a difference in number. The need for this bill was brought to our attention by the Real Estate Commission. And real estate is a field where customers place faith in their agent's trustworthiness. They have unfettered access to buyers' and sellers' homes, and they often assist clients with sometimes complicated negotiations in financial transactions. With over 1,400 real estate salespeople licensed in the state of Alaska, the need for this bill is clear. HB 129 will empower the Real Estate Commission to appropriately regulate their profession, including revoking, refusing to grant, or denying renewal to a salesperson's license, and that is in the best interest of the public, we believe, and protects both the profession and the public. So I appreciate having this opportunity to present the bill to you. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, and as I say, there are other people standing by to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Very informative. Any questions of this witness by the committee? Seeing none, we do have, I believe, Sharon Walsh from Anchorage with the Real Estate Commission. Are you available?
I am. My name is Sharon Walsh. I am the Executive Administrator for the Alaska Real Estate Commission, and I thank you for your time today. The Real Estate Commission, as well as the Alaska Association of Realtors, are in full support of this change in the statute 08.88.071. If you have any specific questions, I'm certainly here to answer them. Thank you.
Are there any questions? I guess, you've brought up the history that there is an individual that has been convicted of a serious crime. Is this the first type of event that this has been witnessed in Alaska, or if you could expand on that a little bit?
It's the first time I've encountered it. I've been with the commission 5 years, so it was our first experience with this scenario, and that's what led to this change in the statute, or this request for the change in the statute.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions of Sharon Walsh from the Real Estate Commission? Seeing none, are there any other individuals online that would like to testify? Is there anyone here present in this room that would like to testify? Seeing none, we will close public testimony on House Bill 129. And are there any discussions of the committee? Senator Bundy.
You ready for a motion?
I'm ready for a motion, Senator Bundy.
And I would move we move committee substitute for House Bill 129 from committee with individual recommendations of attached fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Take a brief at ease. Labor and Commerce back to order. We now have before us Senate Bill 12, the Nurses Overtime Bill. This is a bill by Senator Betty Davis, and I believe her staff is present and ready to participate. So if you could please identify yourself, state your affiliation, and provide the testimony.
Good afternoon, Senator Passman and members of the committee. I'm Tom Obermeyer, staff to Senator Davis. The bill before you is Senate Bill 12, an act relating to limitations on mandatory overtime for registered nurses and licensed practical nurses in health care facilities and providing an effective date. Senate Bill 12 establishes limitations on overtime for registered nurses and health care facilities, provides penalties for violations, and requires reporting of any overtime with the overtime designated as voluntary or mandatory by the RN. The intent is to eliminate mandatory overtime for RNs unless overtime is due to a grave and unforeseen event. Under the bill, use of mandatory overtime in excess of the bill's limitations will result in a report to the Department of Labor. Senate Bill 12 prevents registered nurses and licensed practical nurses from being forced to work mandatory overtime, that is, work beyond an agreed-to, predetermined, regularly scheduled shift, and it protects patients from the dangers caused by overworked nurses. Senate Bill 12 is applicable to all hospitals and health care facilities in Alaska. Under Senate Bill 12, a nurse may not be required or coerced directly or indirectly to work more than 14 consecutive hours without 10 hours of rest. Beyond 80 hours in a 14-day work period, or to accept an assignment of overtime if, in the judgment of the nurse, the overtime would jeopardize patient safety. Nurses, however, can volunteer to work additional shifts beyond this limit so long as the nurse does not work more than 14 consecutive hours without the 10 hours of rest. In recognizing the complexity in delivering quality nursing care on a 24-hour basis, a number of concessions have been made to Alaska hospitals in this bill. The 14-hour maximum workday with 10 hours of rest, which exceeds that allowed in many other states, permits a 2-hour transition for nursing supervisors to call in additional help after 12-hour shifts. This provision was intended to help remedy the problem of nurses being called back to work without adequate rest after working a 12-hour shift. Also, exceptions have been provided for flight nurses on medical transport, school nurses on school-sponsored field trips, and official state emergencies. This bill limits hospital reporting hours to twice a year. It eliminates triple time penalties for egregious violations. It limits maximum fines, and it requires enforcement only for, and this is important, knowing violations. There are few official overtime complaints by nurses due to constant attention to patients, busy and varied schedules, and to some extent fear of direct or indirect retaliation by employees, which is forbidden under this statute, under this current bill. Many nurses testified to overwork, fatigue, disruption of family life, unexpected shift changes, mandatory overtime, mandatory on-call over the course of several hearings on a similar bill last year in the 25th legislature. Low numbers of complaints and benign exit interviews may belie growing dissatisfaction with the difficult work life of nurses, many of whom report burnout and are leaving the profession. In fact, it's been estimated that 500,000 licensed registered nurses in this country have left or are not working in the profession. There are bills in Congress to stem the nursing shortage, including financial aid for education and more rigorous regulation of overtime hours. The Journal of American Medical Association, October of 2002, reported that nurses who suffer from fatigue, increased workloads and shifts in excess of 12 hours greatly increase nursing errors and mortality rates among patients who have common surgeries. In fact, if you look at some of the documentation in your package, they estimate there are about 98,000 deaths each year attributed to errors. I don't know that they're all nursing errors, but to errors in the hospitals. They attribute nursing fatigue as one of the factors. Both nurses and employers alike state that patient safety is paramount, but nurses are allowed to work beyond their endurance levels depending on age and condition, unlike other safety-sensitive jobs, including commercial airline pilots, FAA controllers, railroad engineers, and long-haul truckers. The nursing profession must attract more young people to replace the aging nurses' workforce, which the national average is 46 years, is 95% women. In 2000, In year 2000, only 9% of RNs were under age 25, compared to 25% in 1980. It indicates they're leaving the profession. Women are finding alternative career choices, so it is important for nursing profession to create more jobs for nurses with higher wages, greater responsibilities, better quality of life. Although the University of Alaska has made great progress in increasing the number of nursing graduates in Alaska and in improving nursing programs at all levels, these efforts can only be successful through employment and retention if the nursing profession can provide a quality of life comparable to that in other competitive fields. SB 12 will help remedy this problem by encouraging employers to employ more nurses rather than using mandatory overtime, mandatory on-call, with short staffs to fill routine and critical care positions on a regular basis. The greatest beneficiaries will be the patients who receive the care and the safety they deserve.
Thank you, Mr. Overmyer. Any questions? Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to get it on the record. I doubt it was intentional. In the legislative findings on page 2, line 6, it says health care facilities should provide safe and adequate nursing staff without the need for overtime. I think research has proven that there's a shortage of nurses. We need more nurses. And I just want to make sure that a health care facility wouldn't be in violation of the law if they simply couldn't find nurses.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy. This section 1, and I believe that was in section 1, if you notice on the sectional analysis, is a temporary law section on legislative findings and intent concerning administration of overtime provisions in the nursing profession. I don't know if the drafter is online, but it may be that this section would be removed at some point to give instructive information in this new area of limitation on overtime.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might, but from your point of view and that of the sponsors, a hospital wouldn't be in violation if they sought to employ additional nurses, but they just weren't available.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Yep, just one question. There's one hospital in particular that I know of, and maybe more, where the employees and the management have negotiated a 16-hour workday. I think they work 2 16-hour days, and then they have the rest of the week off. Would your bill then be in violation of that contract between the employees and their management?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes, it would. That issue had come up last year. You're referring to North Star, which is part of Universal Health Services, Inc., the most profitable hospital association in the country. It's a $5 billion operation, $199 million in earnings last year. I know that it's an issue that they brought up because they do work these people, and they have, in the previous testimony, had about 5 or 6 nurses that said they enjoy working those hours. Whether the average nurse at age 48 in Alaska can work those hours every week, I don't know, but clearly there are people willing to do it, and that is something that this committee may have to address.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that gets back to my fundamental concern I have with this bill, and certainly I've had a lot of discussion on this bill. Why not just let the employees and the management negotiate this rather than have us legislate it? Because when we tend to legislate personnel matters, we screw it up.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, we are in fact facing a nursing crisis in this country, and it was determined at least a couple of years ago. This has been going on for 10 years. The nurses are not coming into the profession. We can't hire enough. We have an aging population. If we lose these nurses, these are the backbone of the hospital systems in the country. And if they're overworked and they have too many patients to attend to, which has been demonstrated, and they will make errors, patient safety is jeopardized. And at the same time, The nurses find tremendous dissatisfaction in their work. That's the main reason behind it. I do agree with you that most hospital associations would like to work the hours of their employees that they think will be best for them and the most profitable. We have a great shortage of nurses, but on the other hand, they seem to find them when they need them. I understand there are traveler nurses that come to Alaska on a very regular basis to help fill some of the holes. But the irony is that overtime that was designed many decades ago to try to encourage employers to hire more people is no longer a limiting factor. If it became too expensive to pay time and a half, then they would hire more people. Now it's become a routine part of staffing, and there's no remedy to this. Congress is trying to take it up. Many states are addressing the same issue, and I was hoping that we could do the same in Alaska with this bill.
Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go on record stating that I would love for the people involved in this to come together and negotiate some contract or agreement that they would take care of the problem that I'm trying to address in this bill. Many states have already passed this bill because they have not been able to get with the hospitals or the other health organizations in order to make the changes that need to be made. I have given every opportunity for that to take place. This bill has been introduced since the first of the year, hoping that there would be some time that agreement would come during some of the negotiations that's going on between the nurses and the hospitals. To this point, nothing has happened. And so, yes, that would be great if they could do that. I'm not so sure that they can.
If I could add a little bit to this subject, I met this morning with representatives of Providence, and thank you for taking the time to help inform me on this issue. And what I was assured is that they are working on this issue, that they are in negotiations, that they expect to conclude negotiations in May or June of this year. And I was told that if they did not reach a favorable resolution on this, that they would not oppose this Senate bill next year. So that's what I was informed this morning. I want, you know, just to put that on the record, and it's part of what I'm considering at the moment. But anyway, are there any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, may I continue to speak to that?
Yes,
same
absolutely.
Issue? I'm glad that they had that discussion with you. They've had that discussion with me. The bill is here. I would like to move forward with the bill if they do come to some agreements, and we'll get out of here on the 19th of April. I know I've had the assurance that if they did not come to an agreement, that they are willing to try to work it out. No one ever told me that they were going to accept this bill in its present form, but they did say that they'd be willing to work with me to come up with a bill that both sides could live with. I applaud that. I have no problem with that. But I'm not going to stop the bill simply to say now, because I've never been told that, oh yeah, just put it off and when we come back next year, we'll be able to take care of it. I think it would be an injustice to the people that has asked for this bill to be introduced should I not try to move forward with the bill. It's probably not going to pass this session anyway. There's a bill on the House side, there's a bill over here. My goal is to get the bill up to finance at least so that during the interim we can do some work on it and maybe we could come to agreement. Otherwise, the statement is that's made, they accept the bill the way it is, I don't think so.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Yes, Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see this as a Providence hospital bill, and I don't think
I agree.
I don't think we should hold up the movement of this bill or no movement of this bill just because there's one hospital in particular under negotiations. I think we have to look at this as a policy call for the state of Alaska. And obviously some hospitals have been able to negotiate with their nurses, their employees, and worked out perfect or acceptable working conditions, i.e. the North Star Behavioral Hospital that we talked about earlier, and I know there's other hospitals throughout the state. So I just wanted to say that I get back to the point that I would much rather than us get into trying to figure out what's best for all the nurses throughout the whole state, and certainly there's a lot of native issues that none of us here represent the rural Alaska that, you know, we may not even hear about, that I would much rather see the employees and the managers work this out rather than us legislate it. But I just want to point that out, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I would like to open it up to public testimony now, and we do, because we have quite a number of bills that I want to get through today, so if everyone could limit your testimony to 2 minutes. We have Mike Wallery, Fairbanks. Please state your name, affiliation, and brief, concise testimony.
Thank you, Senators. This is Mike Wallery. I'm General Counsel for Tenenbaums Chiefs Conference, which is a regional health corporation serving the interior of Alaska based out of Fairbanks and operating the Chief Andrew Isaac Health Clinic. We're opposed to the bill in its current form primarily because of the language in it that suggests that federal facilities would be covered. There are some serious issues that are unique to Indian Health Service contracted facilities, particularly that this bill actually makes the situation much worse. Our nursing staff is composed of direct hires, which may or may not be subject, depending upon whether or not it applies to federal facilities. But we also have Commissioned Corps, that's Indian Health Service employees, who are nurses operating under what we call the Intergovernmental Personnel Act, that this legislation would not affect. So what would happen in a situation like this is that our non-IPA, the bill would apply to, may apply to our non-IPA positions, but would not apply to our IPA positions, which actually increases the burden of mandatory staffing over to our IPA nurses, which exacerbates burnout and overwork among that group of nurses. There are differences between the type of nurses. Additionally, the bill does not cover travel, what happens when our nurses are traveling, because we're based in an urban area within a borough. All these services and traveling services apply outside of the borough. Does this statute apply? We think that it's kind of a wrong direction to try and address it this way. The state of Alaska has had similar problems. Fundamentally, it's a nursing shortage. And in the past, Alaska has dealt with these kinds of issues in terms of beefing up training and beefing up the number of, for example, in teachers, where the University of Alaska developed a comprehensive program to develop and train nurses that would be uniquely qualified to serve Alaska, and focusing on the resident native population, which is going to be less mobile and stay in Alaska. We did the same thing a few years ago with the LCSW, Licensed Clinical Social Work Program. We tried to regulate the area. It didn't exactly work. But what did solve the problem was the development of an LCSW program through the University of Alaska that dramatically increased LCSWs and addressed that shortage. We think we can do the same thing here in Alaska.
Yeah. Mr. Waller, could you please summarize and conclude?
Well, that's pretty much it, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none, we will move to Susan Johnston, off nets with Providence.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Susan Johnston, and I am the Regional Director of Human Resources with Providence Health and Services in Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Providence, as was discussed earlier, is currently in the negotiations with our union, the Alaska Nurses Association. Mandatory overtime is an item that we will be discussing at the table. Those negotiations are not likely to complete until late spring or early summer. We do respectfully request that the legislator allow those negotiations to conclude before taking any action on this bill. We have done analysis of what we believe this legislation will cost Providence, and that figure could be as high as $9.2 million. I believe you have been provided with a copy of this analysis, so I won't go through it in detail. The current pay and staffing practices that would potentially be impacted if this bill were to pass at Providence are on-call and callback pay and hours, our overtime hours, and our 12-hour work schedules. Some of the potential actions that we believe would be required by Providence to ensure compliance with this bill would be the elimination of on-call and callback nurses, the elimination of some of our overtime that may lead to a unintentional violation of this bill, and a move from our nurses from 12-hour shifts to 8-hour shifts. Although a move of this nature could potentially provide a significant cost savings for our organization, we recognize that this would be a dissatisfier for our nurses. Thank you for this opportunity to present information regarding the potential impact of this bill on our organization.
Thank you. We'll move to Roger Lurens, also with Providence.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roger Lurens, and I'm the clinical nurse educator for the Heart Center. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I've been a nurse for 14 years, 12 of those at Providence, and I've worked in the cath lab for 8 years. I'm responsible for the staff who work in the cardiac catheterization lab, as well as the cardiovascular observation unit, pre-post care area, and the cardiovascular interventional unit, which is a 24-hour nursing unit. This is a highly specialized area that requires intense training. We provide care for neonates to those in their early hundreds, and most of the emergent patients we care for are experiencing heart attacks. The infants that we care for usually have some sort of congenital defects that need to be corrected either in the cath lab or in surgery. The technical nature of this work necessitates a rather lengthy training program. The nurses that we hire into the lab usually come out of the ICU, and even with that critical care background, it still takes me about a year to train a nurse completely to work in the cath lab and be competent. What this means is that I can't take just any nurse into the lab. Many other areas are able to supplement with nurses from the float pool. This isn't an option for the lab. It is infrequent but not unusual for a nurse to work more than 14 hours caring for patients in the lab. Limiting a nurse to 14 hours could jeopardize the availability of this unit to provide care for a patient in an emergency. It's impossible to schedule for emergencies, as you can imagine. Currently, the nurses working in the lab work 8-hour shifts Monday through Friday, and then anything outside of those hours are covered by a call team. This call team also completes cases that are added on during the day. And because of that, occasionally they may stay longer than the 14 hours. I understand and agree with the intent of this bill, and I agree wholeheartedly that nurses should not be scheduled for mandatory overtime. However, legislating this and then trying to accommodate all the potentially unforeseen situations, as was mentioned earlier, is nearly impossible. Additionally, I think that many nurses would be frustrated with the aspect of not being able to schedule their call time around their work days. This is going to be a huge dissatisfier for many of them, and we're going to lose nurses because of that. Thinking about this bill and what it means, is there's a thought that comes back to me almost continually, is that if I were to come into the cath lab, I don't want the most rested nurse taking care of me. I want the most competent nurse. And this isn't always the case.
Right.
It's not always the same person.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We have Marilyn Edwards. Do you have additional information that you'd like to provide?
Yes, Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Marilyn Edwards. I'm the operating room clinical manager at Providence. I've been here 5 years. I've been a nurse for 31 years, 30 of those years in the OR throughout the nation. I've previously testified regarding Senate Bill 12. My immediate concerns revolve around safe quality patient outcomes and a safe work environment for my OR staff. Some of the concerns that have been expressed by my OR staff are that if this bill passes with its restrictions on overtime, we'll have RNs in our OR that will work their scheduled shifts here and then go to other facilities in the area to get their additional hours. other concerns expressed by my RN staff are that the bill encompasses issues that are highly individualized by circumstances, and that this one-size solution prescribed by state law to resolve or control mandatory nurse overtime concern that does not exist at the PMCOR will create worse problems for our nurse staffing and the ability to provide adequate coverage for surgical procedures. We pride ourselves in the ability to provide quality care to all patients needing the surgical intervention while we provide optimal work-life balance. To clarify this, in my OR, I have 48 RNs, and they can work 8, 10, or 12-hour shifts. 22 of the 48 RNs that I have do work full-time. The other 26 work either a 0.9, 0.8, or 0.6. At this time, I have zero vacancies, and I only have one traveler whose contract is up this week. The OR staff like their current shifts, as is demonstrated in our employee engagement scores and comments, and do not want their call assigned on days where they are not scheduled to work. Current practice is to group their work days with their call so that their scheduled off days are not encumbered with call responsibilities. This practice of this grouping is their preference and their professional choice regarding their individual schedules. I'm unsure if there is an awareness in the nursing community in Alaska regarding this bill and others similar to it and the effects that it will potentially have on our current practices. The anecdotal stories that I've heard presented previously by others in favor of the bill do not reflect current practices, nor are these views shared by our nursing staff. Thank you for the opportunity to present testimony today.
Thank you very much. We move to Valerie Davidson, Alaska Native Tribal Health. Valerie, are you there?
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please state your name and affiliation and brief testimony.
Thank you. My name is Valerie Davidson, and I work for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is a tribally controlled, nonprofit, statewide tribal health organization. We were formed pursuant to federal law to provide a range of medical and community health services to more than 130,000 Alaska Natives. ANTHC and South Central Foundation jointly manage the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage, the tertiary hospital. We employ 500 nurses. In January of this year, ANMC, or the Alaska Native Medical Center, was recognized for a second time as a magnet hospital, a highly prized award given by the American Nursing Association. Only 5% of all U.S. hospitals achieve magnet status, and even fewer are designated a second time. ANMC is the first and only Alaska hospital to receive magnet status. Magnet hospitals have demonstrated that they meet a set of criteria designed to measure the strength and quality of their nursing, including the ability of its nurses to contribute to patient outcomes, and where nurse job satisfaction, low turnover rates, and appropriate grievance resolution are a part of the standard. We at ANMC and ANTHC value our nurses, but we do not support Senate Bill 12 or bills that seek to legislate work schedules and tie the hands of managers who are constantly juggling the demands of patient care against workforce availability and rising costs and chronic underfunding of the tribal health system. We have three primary concerns about the bill as it's currently written. First, it would have a detrimental and disproportionate impact on patients in Alaska, especially in rural Alaska, but because those patients are transferred into Anchorage for tertiary care, it would have an impact at the Alaska Native Medical Center as well. Second, it conflicts with Alaska's longstanding policy of supporting access to health care through allowing healthcare facilities an appropriate degree of flexibility in scheduling direct healthcare providers. And third, as was pointed out earlier by Mr. Wallery, it creates the inaccurate impression that it applies to federal and tribal facilities and programs that comprise the Alaska tribal health system. In rural Alaska, of course, when nurses are not available, patients must be diverted to another facility. The challenge we have is, of course, those patients then get diverted to the Alaska Native Medical Center. Diverting patients disrupts the continuity of care for our patients, and it also imposes an additional financial burden on our already underfunded healthcare system.
If you could summarize, please. I understand you're opposed to the bill.
Sure, thank you.
All right.
One of the things that we know is under federal law, a federal facility performing a federal function is not subject to state regulation, even if the function is carried out by another entity. Congress has not authorized state regulation of federal health care facilities serving tribes and facilities that serve that function. But even besides that, if you look at what federal courts have done, Congress and courts have looked at the Fair Labor Standards Act, and it was recently revised with the benefit of comprehensive comments from nursing associations, patient advocacy groups, and healthcare facilities. It allows for that degree of flexibility, and so for those reasons, we oppose the legislation.
Is Angel Dodiman there? And do you have anything additional to state that was not stated by Valerie Davidson?
Thank you very much. My name is Angel Dodiman. I'm President CEO of the Alaska Native Health Board. ANHB is a tribal health advocacy organization representing 24 Alaska tribal health entities throughout Alaska. Collectively, we employ 7,000 Alaskans and provide health services to approximately 130,000 Alaska Native customer owners. However, in many areas, our organizations are the only providers of health services serving Alaska Natives and non-Natives alike. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 12, and just so that you know, the Alaska Native Health Board opposes the bill. First, I'd like to recognize and acknowledge written comments from some of our member organizations, including the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, Tanana Chiefs Conference, and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And we'd be more than happy to provide those written materials to the committee if they've not already been received.
We would be welcome to receive those, so please, if you could forward them to my office. And I understand you do oppose Senate Bill 12. Thank you for your testimony. Is there a Jamie Easterly with the Ketchikan Registered Nurses?
Yes, this is Jamie Easterly.
Please identify yourself, state your affiliation, and provide your testimony.
My name is Jamie Easterly. I'm a staff nurse in Ketchikan. Been a staff nurse for about 20 years. And I would just, I don't have a speech or anything, but what I would like to say is, number one is patient safety. Rest periods is what we most of the nurses are asking for. We have a hard time equating the money that's been spoken about in place of a patient's safety first. We feel, actually, let me make this short and sweet. I was married to a pilot for 32 years. He's passed now. And there were the old days when they flew 16, 18.
Ma'am, maybe you could just summarize that you're
eating. Yeah, 16 to 18 hours a day. And it was unheard of that they would be limited to the time that they flew in an airplane. Just as we are having a hard time thinking about the medical model being in a different form, it may be time that we look at nursing in a different form. It was a very big deal when they limited the pilot's time in an airplane, but we saved many, many lives. I just would put a plea out that we need to think differently. We need to not equate our patient safety with money. We also need to think about the new young nurses that are coming into nursing, and that they do not think about, and some of them don't come into nursing because they're not willing to give their life away to the hospital, being called back, being asked to work more hours than the average person would do at a job. I'd like to finish by saying, what other job do you know that if you do not stay overtime, that you're abandoning your job? Because we would be abandoning our patients. And I just would like us to look long and hard at that. And I represent quite a few nurses here in Ketchikan who are for SB 12. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Nicole Welch, Fairbanks Memorial.
Hi, this is Nicole Welch. I am the interim Chief Human Resource Officer for Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. Thank you for allowing me to testify on Senate Bill 12. We here at FMH are opposed to Senate Bill 12. Our facility has been able to work directly with staff regarding scheduling to come up with the best plan to meet our patient needs. We do so through a variety of shifts, including 8, 10, 12-hour shifts, and varying full-time, part-time, and per diem statuses, as well as the utilization of on-call and callback. We have not had to mandate overtime and have been able to staff to meet our patients' needs through the ability to be flexible. But the need to be flexible is at the root of our opposition to this bill. We as a hospital need to be able to maintain the ability to work directly with our nursing staff and specific patient needs to address and make decisions regarding staffing issues. The ability to maintain this flexibility also leads to our ability to retain the nursing staff who are looking for creative scheduling to accommodate their work-life balance. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. We would now move to the Kenai LIO. Stacy Allen, are you there? Or is that Palmer?
No, I'm in Kenai. Thank you, Mr.
All right,
Chairman.
Please identify yourself and brief testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Stacy Allen. I'm a registered nurse and have been since 1984. Currently, I work for the Laborers, Local 341, representing about 250 nurses at Alaska Regional Hospital. One thing that struck me so far in the comments, I'm curious, what other industry do we say, let's let the boss and the employees work out safety issues when it comes to matters of public safety? Have the facilities, the healthcare association, the ASHNA, have they come to the bill sponsor and sat down and said, let's talk about the concerns we have and let's work together to come up with a solution? So far as I know, that has not occurred. So it kind of indicates to me that it's going to take a legislative solution to this problem. Our members, we have about 2,200 altogether, most of whom work construction. They are highly aware of safety, and we work very hard to make sure that we work safe. As the one Jamie said in Ketchikan, we don't have a choice as nurses whether or not, up to a point, if we walk away from a situation that's unsafe, we may be putting not only our licenses on the line, but we may be putting patients on the line. And nurses are very torn by this this issue. And our people are being driven out of the profession, particularly in the OR and in the dialysis unit. And I would like the folks to know there in Juneau that the local very much supports SB 12 as a public safety issue, plain and simple. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Allen. We now move to Anchorage LIO, Nancy Davis, the Alaska Nurses Association.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Pascavan and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Davis, and I live in Juneau. I have been a registered nurse since 1969, working as direct care, supervisor, manager, and executive. I currently work for a hospice and home health agency. I'm also the president of the Alaska Nurses Association, which has over 1,000 registered nurse members, and we have been working together for 5 years to address this issue of mandatory overtime and excessive work hours for registered nurses and licensed practical nurses. We support Senate Bill 12 because it addresses a patient and a worker safety issue. It's something that I think nurses, employers, facilities, and also patients should be able to come together on the side of safety. Senate Bill 12 facilitates that coming together in a standard and statewide way to protect patients and nurses alike. Patient safety should not be a negotiable issue. It really should be a standard regardless of whether a nurse has a collective bargaining agreement or not. While Alaska does have challenges of being both rural and remote, I understand that, having worked in throughout Southeast Alaska and also Bethel in the YK Delta and the Kotzebue area, and I was in a prior position was responsible for statewide public health nursing services as the chief of public health nursing. But you know, other states with large rural areas are also addressing this concern of excessive work hours for nurses and the impact it has on patient safety. Alaskans really do deserve our best efforts to protect them from preventable injury and death when they are being cared for in a health facility. The Alaska Nurses Association supports Senate Bill 12. We have educated our membership over the years about the problems associated with excessive work hours and its impact on errors and preventable injuries to patients and nurses. I'm hopeful that the committee will pass this bill out to House to the Senate Finance It really is time for Senate Bill 12 to pass. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. We move to Kendall Sawa in Ketchikan.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 12. My name is Kendall Sawa, and I'm the Vice President for Patient Care Services here in Ketchikan for Ketchikan General Hospital. And we are also opposed to the bill in its current form. Ketchikan General Hospital has not experienced, nor do we expect our staff to do mandatory overtime. At all times, the option to do overtime is strictly voluntary and left at the option of the nurse. Additionally, Ketchikan General Hospital has no complaints or grievances in all of calendar year 2008 around inappropriate use of overtime, nor do we expect any in the future as we continue our current unrestricted practices. In order to prevent burnout for nurses, I think many hospitals in Alaska or throughout the nation exercise some creative and scheduling practices to recruit nurses in a very competitive environment. One such practice is to allow nurses to work at partial FTEs, 0.8, 0.9, 32 or 36 hours per week, yet receive full-time benefits. This is in the midst of a nursing shortage, and to respond to an aging nursing population, I worry that the bill sends the wrong message and drives hospitals to do just the opposite, and that's to move to 40-hour work weeks to prevent being in the situation of overtime as outlined in Senate Bill 12.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sawat, for your testimony. We will now move to Mr. Bedett. Or Beatty, I should say. Excuse me. I mispronounced your name, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It is Rod Beatty. I'm president of the Alaska State Hospital Nursing Home Association. Three of you heard the testimony in the previous committee. Senator Myers heard it for several years now in other settings, as Senator Bundy. So I will just cover the highlights. This testimony is in your packet, as is a chart that I will refer to that you've seen before. My testimony has been approved by our membership, which is 27 members throughout the state. We greatly respect Senator Davis and her work in health care and enjoy working with her on a number of issues. But we do oppose this bill because we believe we're meeting the findings and intent of this legislation already. Patient safety is paramount to our members. And if you go to Hospital Compare at the national website, you will see our facilities compare very well, if not equal to or better than what's happening nationally, including the individual patient responses that are posted to that website. We don't use mandatory overtime in our facilities as a way to make up for short staffing. That happens in other states, and that's in part what has caused legislation to come forward in other states. If you look at the chart that's in your packet for 2008, you'll see there's very little mandatory overtime that's been reported. Most of it was at API. And you did take steps to correct that at API 2 years ago, and that number is coming down. What you will see is that we're using over a quarter million temporary nursing hours that are being purchased by our members to fill gaps when those gaps occur. The overtime that's being worked is voluntary and generally comes at the request of nursing staff rather than any kind of mandate imposed by management. There's local flexibility issues, and you've heard those. North Star was mentioned by Senator Meyer. I will just tell you that Petersburg reported that they're on a 12-hour shift only because the nursing staff asked for it. It is not cost-effective for many facilities to have 12-hour shifts because they end up having three 12s for 36 hours and lose 4 hours per individual employee and do it more as a convenience for nursing, not so much because management wants it that way. I would just point out that there's a number of steps that the hospitals have taken to try to solve this problem, not the least of which is to make contributions to the University of Alaska Nursing Program to help grow the nursing program from 100 to 200 graduates each year. And I will stop there, given the time, and be happy to respond to any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The chart, and I remember the chart from last year, although this must be an updated one, I guess, because it's dated March of 09. I'm not sure that you were the guys that should have actually done the assessment, but aside from that, your first couple of comments were that you're already complying with with what the bill would do anyhow. Is that correct? Did I understand you correctly?
Through the chair.
You already complied.
Senator,
there's no mandatory overtime required anyhow.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, we're complying with the finding's intent, which is to treat nurses fairly and to provide top patient care. And we're doing that by not using mandatory overtime clearly as one step, but also by using other techniques to get there. And you've heard those from some of the people already testifying. Temporary nursing hours is one of those provisions.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, this still causes me to be concerned, and although I see there are a couple of hospitals on your chart that actually have a longer shift, the greatest shift is 12 hours, and then I'm of course scratching my head a little bit with a section in the bill on page 3, line 14, number 6, and I don't know if you have it before you, and it's one of the exceptions to the rule is what it amounts to, and I've worked reading a lot of contracts and things like that, and this one confuses me as to how it precludes anything other than a shift that's longer than 14 hours. So it's not just 12 hours of mandatory. It appears that as long as it's voluntary, you can work 14 hours as long as there's a 10-hour break. So you can work in excess of 80 hours in a 14-day period. And as a matter of fact, the way I read it, you could work continuously that way from what this says, unless I'm misinterpreting the bill, that you could work continuously 14-hour shifts as long as they were not back-to-back shifts and there was 10 hours in between.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, our concern with this provision, and I have to say that page 3, there are a number of exceptions set out, and we're not sure how they play against each other, but the 14-hour limit seems to be the most controlling one. If somebody has worked a 12-hour shift and then they have to stay, either voluntarily or mandatorily, that 14 hours comes into play. And there are times when that will happen, either because the nurse wants to do it or because there's a need, particularly in rural facilities where they don't have other staff immediate available. This would become a violation of that. Our facilities would have to take a look at how they staff and how often that happens and try to figure out what the correct balance would be in order to guard against going over this 14-hour limit that's in the bill. And that's in part some of the testimony that you heard earlier about what the cost would be in order to have enough FTEs to make sure that that didn't happen, whether it was voluntarily agreed to by the nurse or whether it was mandatory.
If I may, just one
yes,
last question.
Senator Thomas, please continue.
The way I read it, I think you're taking care of up to 14 hours. So, and I'm surprised that you would be concerned that we can't get to 16 somehow. And I guess the last part of it is, what kind of impact is the increased nurse capacity because of the University of Alaska's program? What is that? It seemed to have had some impact because in most cases the difference on your chart between rates of vacancies has gone down generally for almost everybody, and in particular, well, I won't suggest just Providence or anything, but it's generally gone down, so it's having a positive effect. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator, that is correct. If you look at that second column, I try to get a subjective opinion from our CEOs every year as to whether they see the nursing situation as better, worse, or about the same. And as you can see, about 12 of them responded that it's the same, 8 said it was worse, and 4 said it was better. So overall, we're not seeing a major deterioration, but the challenges are still there, and the vacancy percentage is still pretty significant in many of the facilities. But they're coping with those situations.
How could it be getting worse?
Well, if you look at the breakdown of this, if you're in a rural facility, nurses do not come out of the University of Alaska Nursing Program ready to go to work on the floor of a hospital or a nursing home, for that matter. And so there's a real need to continue to build those work-ready programs, if you will, or to have capacity for the larger hospitals to actually train nurses that could then go out to the rural areas. And I think you're hearing that concern from some of the rural testifiers here today, that there may be nurses, but they may not be prepared to work in a hospital, or they may not want to go to a rural area to work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beatty. If we could, Leanne Cox.
Thank you. Hi, thank you. I'm Leanne Cox. I'm the Human Resources Manager at Wildflower Court. Thank you to the Chair and the Committee. I'll be brief and speak basically how SB 12 affects us directly. We're a small nonprofit skilled nursing facility with 57 beds, and we have 14 full-time nurses and three casual. And I'll say that we have no need for the legislation. We have had, in the past 3 years, we've had no mandatory overtime at all. We've had no complaints at all for overtime or the shifts. We have 8, 10, and 12-hour shifts, and we try to be flexible based on what the employee is requesting. And again, as previous testimony, is kind of difficult to negotiate sometimes with the shift changes. The legislation would needlessly set a precedent for government intervention, and there's just none needed as far as we are concerned in many other facilities in the state. The statistics reinforce our position that statewide the use of mandatory overtime is rare in hospitals and nursing facilities, and the legislation is just unwarranted. SB 12 would require us to document work hour details for employees affected by this legislation, and as a facility that doesn't implement the mandatory overtime, why do we need to be burdened with the extra reporting for a problem that we don't have? Wildflower Court is a very responsible employer, and we also support nurses to go through their training. We've sponsored several certified nurse aides to go through and receive their RNs, and have worked with us for many years. And again, we've had no complaints, we have no issues with the mandatory overtime, and we certainly oppose SB 12.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, Chairman. Senator Davis.
Have you provided that information to the committee?
And we have through ASHNA, ma'am. We participated in their...
The particular one that you're reading from, have you provided us that?
Because no, but I would be happy to submit that to you.
I would request that you do.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Christy Artuso, or maybe... please, your name and affiliation and brief testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Christy Artuso, and I am a registered nurse and have been one for 30 years. I currently am the Director of Neurosciences at Providence Alaska Medical Center. I also sit on the National Board of Directors of the Certification Corporation of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses. We are the largest specialty organization in the country and represent over 500,000 nurses. I will say that we do not advocate mandatory overtime for staffing, and that point is clearly written with the organization. However, we also do not believe that government interference is required for a nurse's ability to schedule their work hours and to balance their work, their personal life, and their professional endeavors. I purchased my first home from overtime work. I chose to work 16-hour shifts 3 days a week for 18 months and saved up that first down payment in 1983. If you remember, the interest rates at the time were about 18%, but I was able to buy that home. I put myself through undergraduate school and then through through graduate school and then postgraduate education, working overtime. I also have used overtime to do fun things with my children, to take ski trips and added vacations on a nurse's salary. Over 30 years, I've maintained clinical expertise at the bedside. I am a nationally recognized expert in critical care, progressive care, and neuroscience nursing. At no time have my patients ever been in jeopardy because I'm capable of making the decision about the hours that I work. On a given day, nurses come into the hospital and say, "If you need someone to stay an extra 4 hours tonight, please pick me. I'm off tomorrow, but I'd like to have the extra 4 hours." This legislation would directly impact the nurse's ability to actually control their work hours, but nurses are resourceful individuals. I've worked in many communities where nurses work full-time and part-time at different organizations so that they can meet the financial obligations of their home and support their families. This bill would negatively impact our ability to provide access to quality health care services for the patients of Alaska who deserve that access. We are working diligently, as you have heard through testimony, to provide programs that will increase the expertise of nurses at the bedside. And in the past 3 years since I've been in Alaska, I have seen that expertise grow. and we continue to work toward that, partnering with the University of Alaska and partnering with administrators as well as bedside nurses to create programs that grow that level of expertise. I oppose this legislation. It's not time for government to control a nurse's ability to choose their work hours, to choose the flexibility. It's one of the components that actually drives people into this industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Question? Lori, oh, excuse me, Senator Meyer.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead if you've got a good one.
A good one? you better go ahead, Senator.
Thank you for your passionate and concise testimony. Could you direct me to the portion of the bill that would preclude you from doing what you had done and working voluntarily? I'm assuming that the hours that you talked about were voluntary in the example you gave. Could you direct me to the portion of the bill that would preclude somebody from working voluntarily?
Absolutely. Through the chair, the portion of the bill I'm referring to is the portion that limits the number of hours a nurse can voluntarily work to 14. They currently choose to work 12-hour shifts, and as you've heard before, although 8-hour shifts are much easier for a hospital and an administration to manage, 12-hour shifts have been created across the country to meet that need. Many times nurses come in, most of them, almost all of the ones on my units are on 12 hours, and they'll say, I'd like to stay the extra 4. That would be a 16-hour shift, and per this bill, would not be permitted. We've talked about nurses who work the Baylor plan, 2 16-hour shifts for full-time benefits. But what about the nurse that works a 16-hour shift on Monday and one on Friday because those are the days her husband is home to take care of the children? What about the nurse who chooses to work back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday, 16-hour shift? I'm worried that exceptions that are made for one organization over another are really branding individuals and saying, well, it's okay for one, but not for another. And so that's the section I'm referring to where you're limiting the choices that people have to work. We don't use mandatory overtime at Providence. I've not encountered it since I've been here. And I have worked in a state where it was used, and I have refused mandatory overtime and been permitted to go home by saying, I am too tired to stay. So I do not believe that it is warranted here in Alaska. I've not seen it as necessary.
So if I may, so would you, if the bill allowed 16 hours of voluntary work and still disallowed mandatory overtime, would that make it acceptable to you then?
My concern, through the chair, my concern is that I do not feel that professionally nurses should have legislation that really interferes with their ability. I don't see it as a problem. It's only been in place in about 13 states in the country, not even half of the United States, because most of them realize that this is not an issue that requires legislation and brands. I've also heard testimony from areas that it would impact that have used overtime because they've got no other resources, and I believe we heard before that that could be a problem in certain areas. But that is my point, is the 16 hours, 14 hours, on-call time that goes into additional hours. I just don't believe that putting constraints on would really meet the needs of the legislation, and it certainly, I believe, would impact the nurse's ability and their interest in staying in the profession.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony today. And certainly, I think it's great that the hours, the flexible hours, works for the convenience of the nurse. If his or her spouse, you know, has 2 days off, then they can work 16-hour days and basically get in a full week's work in 2 days. I think that's great. And again, that gets back to my point that should be something that the employee and the employer work out and not let us meddle in that. But the ultimate concern here, and I think the concern of the sponsor of the bill, is the safety of the patient. Now, when you're working 16 hours, 15 hours, 14 hours, at any time when you were doing that, did you feel like the patient's safety was in jeopardy?
Through the chair.
You may not want to answer that. No.
I would be happy to answer that with an excellent outcome. I worked 16-hour shifts 3 days a week for 18 months. The first shift, the 8-hour shift, I worked in the medical intensive care unit at Brookdale Hospital Medical Center, an 1,100-bed medical center in Brooklyn, New York. The second half of my 16-hour shift, I chose to work in the emergency room, a level 1 trauma center that saw 100,000 patients per year. After 18 months pulling double shifts consistently every week, I was asked to become the manager of the emergency room, and I did. That tells me, and should tell you, that my performance was stellar. When I left 5 years later, I went into New York. I became a staff nurse in the open heart unit. 3 months later, I was asked to become a manager and progressed through various leadership positions from that point forward. Continued to work overtime. When it's by choice and you recognize your own limitations, I do not believe it impacts quality. And many of the studies that have been published that do talk about that quality issue have also said that these nurses have worked 3 or 4 or 2 12-hour shifts followed by a 16-hour shift. And very few of them have quantified whether that nurse had the next day off, whether they had the day off before, whether they were a working mother. I challenge you to ask yourself, is there any difference to a nurse working a 12-hour shift coming home to a 6-month-old infant who has colic and coming in the next day and working an 8-hour shift or a 12-hour shift and coming home to the same 6-month-old infant? It really amounts to the same thing in recognizing your own limitations, but as professionals, we need to be able to do that. We also heard exceptions about psychiatric hospitals, and I will tell you that saying that it's different, you could work 16 hours in a psychiatric hospital. If you put me in a room for 16 hours with a suicidal adolescent, I would need to be committed. Give me a gunshot wound to the chest and I'm happy as can be. So it really is personal, individual. We're all very different. But I still feel passionately that this is not a legislative issue. This is a personal, professional choice and should be left up to the individuals. Thank you.
Thanks.
Lori Herman.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Lori Herman. I'm the Regional Director of Government Affairs for Providence Health and Services in Alaska. And for the record, Senator Paskman, if I misled you this morning or if I misspoke, I apologize. Providence is currently in negotiations with our nursing union. We hope to conclude those by May or maybe into early June, and we are very hopeful that we will be able to come to some sort of an agreement on the nurse overtime issues that are the subject of this legislation. If that is not a possibility, if we walk away from the table and that hasn't been settled, our commitment is to work with our nurses and nursing organizations throughout the state, as well as the tribal health providers and other hospitals in the state, to try to come to some sort of a compromise that could be included in this bill, or hopefully there's a possibility there wouldn't be need for any legislation. I just wanted to clear the record.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
May I ask a question?
Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Ms. Herman. You're the Government Affairs at Providence?
I am.
Okay. Has the negotiation started at Providence with
the
nurse union?
Yes, they have.
How far have you progressed? Because I think we heard that you've been talking about doing this, but you haven't been doing it.
Well, I hesitate to speak much about ongoing labor negotiations away from the table. I am not a member of the negotiating team. I can tell you what I am aware of. We have had 2 meetings thus far. The first meeting where Providence submitted their list of issues that they thought were relevant, and I am assured that mandatory overtime was on that list. Then we had a second meeting where the nurses union presented their list of the issues that they wanted on the table, and I'm told then the third meeting is scheduled for Monday, April 13, where I would imagine serious negotiations would then begin. The first 2 meetings, I believe, have just been a matter of information exchange for each side.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe there may be a Debbie Thompson that I may have missed. I thought she had only for questions. Is that you?
No, I'm here, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
And members of the committee. My name is Debbie Thompson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Nurses Association and a working registered nurse. My testimony is on record with your committee already. I'd just like to impress the importance that this bill is a patient safety bill as well as a nurse safety bill. I would like to call attention to the fact that 50% of nurses are not represented by unions, nor do they have the option to negotiate this with their employers. And that I can tell you that it has been addressed in negotiations in one facility in this hospital, and that negotiation team was told that it was going to be settled down in Juneau as a legislative matter. It has not come up in negotiations at Providence yet. I would like to remind this committee that a Baylor plan was never intended to be two 16-hour shifts. It was intended to be two 12-hour shifts and pay the nurses for 40 hours to have coverage on the weekends. I respectfully request that your committee move Senate Bill 12 on to the Senate Finance Committee, and I would like to thank all of you for your time and consideration on this bill. If there are any questions at this time, I would be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. No questions from the committee. I believe we have one additional witness that's been signaling from the audience. So please provide your name, state your affiliation, and brief testimony.
My name is Kathleen Geddes. I'm a registered nurse at Providence Alaska Medical Center, and I am a little bit afraid to say I am the union president. So I will keep it as brief as possible, but I feel compelled to set the record straight on some information that was shared. But before I do that, you've heard a lot of statistics, and so I don't want you to hear the statistics today. I want you to see a statistic. This is our job description at Providence Alaska Medical Center that I will submit to record. In the job description, we are held accountable as a reference to this book called Wall of Silence. This is written by Rosemary Gibson. It's the untold story of the medical mistakes that kill and injure millions of Americans daily. I am the face of a statistic. My mother died because of an error in her care when she was 41 years old. They misdiagnosed her. I was 20 in college. I had three siblings. I dropped out of school, and I cared for them because I didn't have a father to assist. Ended up graduating with a social work degree, and I went back to school later and finished my Bachelor of Science. So instead of going over all the error rates, I wanted you to see an error rate. Now, to speak to our negotiations. We have met twice. I do not want this to be a Providence issue. This isn't a Providence issue. This is an Alaskan consumer safety issue. At negotiations, mandatory overtime was not brought forth on our first day by Providence. We met a second day. Providence presented zero proposals. We did present our proposals. Speaking to Ms. Artuso's comment through the chair, she stated that there were 13 states that have legislation. Actually, there are 15 states. There are also 14 other states lining up to fix our working conditions. We also have national legislation pending to ban the use of mandatory overtime, and Representative Young actually signed on to that bill. What else? Through the chair to Senator Bundy, you had asked about replacing the holes. 73% of our nurses at Providence fill vacancy holes by working voluntary overtime. The problem is that all the studies out there look at mandatory overtime. They don't look at the error rates for voluntary overtime. And what we've done is with our staffing shortage or nursing shortage, we've employed travelers. In the adult critical care unit alone, we have 21 travelers. There's no investment into our community, and there's no continuity of care when they finish their 6 weeks or 11 weeks. And then through the chair, I graduated from high school in 1983 when Ms. Artuso bought her first house. I was 18 and spry, and I didn't have a gray hair. But I don't know if I could be confident that at 16 hours I provided safe care. How do you know? You have errors of omission and you have errors of commission, the ones that you don't even know happened because you were too fatigued. really, I'll end there and say to the members of the committee, the Alaskan public does have a right to expect when they walk into a healthcare facility that the nurses taking care of them are alert and properly rested. Every patient and every family member should ask their bedside nurse, how many days have you worked in a row? How many hours have you worked in the last few days? How many hours have you worked today? And have you received any meals or breaks today? If the nurse is not forthright with the information, ask to speak to the hospital administrator and get the facts. Senate Bill 12, strictly limiting mandatory overtime, is common sense. It'll protect the patient, it'll protect the nurses, it'll protect the healthcare facilities, it'll enhance the nursing profession, it will help retain and recruit nurses, and I respectfully ask the committee to move this forward to the Senate Finance Committee. And now my mouth is all dry, so I'm prepared for questions if there are any.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else? One additional witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Teknos. I'm the Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. Evidently, we are one of the few. I guess I should go on record to also add that we represent nurses, actually the entire healthcare workforce at South Peninsula Hospital and also at Kodiak Island. So we have a somewhat semi-private facility that we deal with, as well as a Providence Kodiak Island facility as well. We have had collective bargaining agreements in place at South Peninsula Hospital since 1989. We've continue to represent, we've negotiated in the contract, and the 16-hour we have in our collective bargaining agreement language that actually does address the mandatory versus the voluntary, and they are allowed on a voluntary basis to work up to the 16. We are concerned about some of the flexibility, but I think some of the points that were made today as I was here listening to the testimony, on-call is a much bigger issue at our facility. We have the voluntary overtime that we deal with that is separate and apart, I guess, from Senate Bill 12 here. But we also are looking at the number of patients with the nurses, and that is another issue that we're presenting. We're also in contract negotiations with South Peninsula Hospital currently. We'll be going into negotiations with Providence, Kodiak Island, probably within the next month. But these are issues that we are bringing to the table, and we're hoping that we are successful. But I think the point that was made earlier, there is a large number of the nurses out there that are unorganized. Now one of two things happens. Either you don't pass this legislation and it's an opportunity for us to continue to organize, or there's protection for those unorganized workers out there. We do support the concept of Senate Bill 12. We do believe that maybe in some facilities where you've not been able to actually negotiate those particular protections for the members that you represent, this is an issue that in some shape or form needs to be addressed. And I appreciate the time and appreciate your listening to all the testimony tonight.
Thanks. You very much.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Meyer has a question
for you. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Huff, for joining us. So obviously, overtime can be negotiated between the union and the employer?
Well, with the Teamsters and South Peninsula Hospital, we've successfully negotiated, and it's been in the contract probably about 8 years.
And not that we're trying to help your business here, but you mentioned the non-represented nurses, that if they see that the represented nurses are getting overtime or it's negotiated the mandatory overtime issue, then they can either organize themselves or they can demand to their management that they have the same benefit.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that would be another option, yes. Not necessarily a guarantee, depending on who the management is that you're actually dealing with across the table.
Yeah, very good. But the managers I know, usually they would prefer not to have to become unionized in order to you know, make their employees happy. So, I mean, in other words, if the nurses see at Providence that they're getting something, then that those that aren't organized will either ask it and management will grant it, or they may become organized.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that may be a possibility. I don't know that I would on record guarantee that. I've dealt with employers myself where that has not necessarily been the case.
Thank you.
Any others here that would like to provide testimony as to Senate Bill 12? Seeing none, we will close public testimony on Senate Bill 12. Senator Bundy.
I have a question for the bill sponsor or someone who might help flesh out my understanding. We had testimony from people who are in federal facilities. And the testimony was that state law doesn't affect them, but they're still concerned about the bill. And I'm just having a little trouble understanding if they're not going to be affected, why would they be concerned about the bill? If anybody can help me broaden my understanding there.
I, Mr. Chairman, I would not like to speak for the people that spoke those remarks. When we had this bill before us last year, we negotiated an amendment to go into the bill that they said was quite okay with them and they would be accepting of this bill. It does not have that in there now, but it has been offered out there for it to go within the bill. So I'm confused as you are as to why that's not their only issue, because that's what they claimed their only issue was the last time that this bill was heard last year, when it died in rules on the House side, which means it had gone through both Senate and House, so all those committees, and that's the only issue that they addressed. We put the amendment in there. They addressed that and said that was fine. The bailout plan was also addressed at that time and put into the bill that we had ready to pass that did not make it to the floor on the House side. And I presented those same amendments back to this group, this committee, as well as the health committee. I think they said they would be willing to look at that, would put them back in the bill. I don't think they have refused to do that. And that's about as much as I can say as far as what we tried to do to work out that situation. We do have information that says that we did not have to put that amendment in there, that it did not affect them.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Comments. What I would like to do right now is hold Senate Bill 12 for today and bring it up Tuesday, give people the chance to think about that. Also, we are under the 24-hour rule, so depending on, you know, we lost last Tuesday, so our schedule's getting impacted. But I know Senator French has been waiting now. He was on the next on the list, Senate Bill 61. So, again, I do expect that we will move Senate Bill 12 Tuesday at the latest is my intent, if that's what the committee is so inclined to do. So I would like to call Senator French in, who's been kindly waiting. Senator French, please state your name and who you represent or the area that you represent, and please enlighten us again on Senate Bill 61.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hollis French, representing Senate District M. I'm here today to give you a brief overview of SB 61, Affordable Health Insurance for All Alaskans. There are 115,000 Alaskans are fellow citizens who do not enjoy the same thing that you and I enjoy, which is a health insurance policy. The reason that the vast majority of them do not enjoy a health insurance policy is that they happen to work at jobs that do not provide health insurance as a benefit. The vast majority of Alaskans who don't have health insurance work at jobs that just don't provide health insurance. The idea behind this bill is to make insurance affordable so that they can address their health needs in a timely manner in a fashion that allows early action to be taken against health care issues instead of waiting to go to the emergency room and with all the problems that that entails. Very, very briefly, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the bill is modeled very loosely after the Massachusetts plan, which was a marriage, if you will, between a very, very blue legislature and a very, very red governor, Mitt Romney, 3 years ago, and they crafted a solution with the help of the Heritage Heritage think tank and came up with an idea that, that works there. It leaves the current insurance landscape in place. It does not affect anyone who has insurance coverage that they wish to keep. It only makes new insurance, new private insurance, affordable for those people who cannot afford it. And so that's the basic overview of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you much, Senator French. Senator Bundy.
Thank you. It was 100-some thousand uninsured.
115, through the chair, 115,000, Senator Bundy. Thank you, yes.
And do you have an age breakdown on that? And the reason I ask, when I was age 18 to 25, I was bulletproof, and the last thing I needed in the world was health insurance. I wouldn't have paid for it or used it. I would have taken wages over it any day, but life changes and your expectations changes. So the reason for the question, I'm just wondering about a demographic breakdown.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, it certainly is skewed toward the young. Anyone who's 65 years or older, of course, has access to Medicare. The very poor, of course, have access to Medicaid. And it is, you know, the 18 to 30 demographic who probably have the hardest time appreciating the need for health insurance. While, but I think conversely, they're also going to get treated in the event of an emergency or the event of a catastrophe. Those individuals will get treated, their costs will be absorbed, they are passed off, frankly, to you and to everyone else in the state, and we believe that there is a way to fashion a health insurance plan that fits their needs. It's more along the lines of catastrophic health care, but more than that, and still allows them to pitch into the pool. Obviously, the more people in an insurance pool, the better and farther the risks are spread.
Any further questions for Senator French? I think it was a very concise initial presentation. I know he has his aide with him. You know, I know that I have a meeting that I have to be at in about 7 minutes. You know, we have a schedule that we're not going to complete today, so I don't know that we're going to get to public testimony, but I would at least think it'd be useful to have an explanation of the bill by your staff.
Mr. Motoro.
Thank you, Chair Passman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy Motoro, staff to Senator French. And Senator French gave an overview of the legislation. Section by section, I can just flip through the bill real quick. The first section provides some findings. That's page 1 and 2 of the legislation. On page 2, line 24, it establishes what the legislation would try to accomplish. That's based on the facts that are established in the findings. Again, moving quickly, if you have any questions, feel free to stop me. Page 3, line 9, establishes the healthcare board. 13 different stakeholders from a broad variety of groups will be on this board to help implement the plan that's established under this bill. Page 4, line 5, starts the section on the powers and duties of the healthcare board, and this establishes them as the overseer of the healthcare fund, which helps pay for this reform, and it also establishes them and gives them some oversight into recommending how healthcare plans can better serve Alaskans under this plan and in other publicly funded programs, such as SCHIP and programs such as that. That's more of on a recommendation basis. Their main role, though, is to oversee the fund and help oversee the clearinghouse, which is coming up in the bill. Mm-hmm. And coming up in the bill is actually the next section. Page 5, line 12, establishes the healthcare clearinghouse. In Massachusetts, this is an electronic Expedia-style format where people can get on and can compare health plans side by side, learn about different options, what might suit their needs the best. I did a little research for the last committee, the Senate HES committee, and found that they also worked with public-private partnerships and other formats to get information out and help connect people to healthcare plans. A very effective way to, you know, get the word out about a broad, you know, reform effort. The next section deals with essential healthcare services. And this is probably the most controversial portion of the plan. Senator French has called it that before. It requires that individuals in this state have access to some sort of health care. If you're enrolled in a publicly funded program already, that counts. If you're an IHS beneficiary, that counts, though you can opt into the program. I'll get to what the program and the voucher system would do in a second. But that's one of the more, you know, controversial elements. On the flip side, as Senator French said, once you get everyone in the healthcare pool, you then have the option to do other reforms. And those are coming up in the bill as well. But one of which is requiring that health insurance plans be offered to any individual regardless of pre-existing conditions or other health issues they may have that might prevent them from getting coverage today. That's a big section of the bill. Flipping now to page 7, there's some essential health care services. These are broad categories of things that should be included in a health care plan. It should be noted that nowhere in the bill are there financial criteria spelled out that all plans must include. The goal is to increase consumer choice. That includes, you know, high deductible health care plans and things of that sort, so long as they protect people in times of need when they need health care. That is a provision of the bill that the board must help ensure. Flipping on now to page 8, this deals with the employer provisions of the legislation. Depending on the size of an employer, based on payroll, there are different levies that can be assessed to help pay for this plan. For an employer with a payroll below $500,000 a year, this bill will not affect them whether they provide health coverage or not. For an employer with a payroll between $500,000 and $1 million a year, the bill levies them 1% of their payroll if they don't provide health insurance. Now, the bar for providing health insurance is relatively low. Either the employer must offer to pay 33% of a health care plan, the premium, or they must successfully enroll 25% of the people in their plan that they do offer, regardless of how much they offer to pay. And then on top of that, for employers $1 million or more, they shall pay 2% of payroll. But there's a really big opt-out clause in this provision. You know, we recognize that is a chunk of money. If an employer merely establishes a Section 125 account, which allows an employee to purchase health coverage with pre-federal tax dollars, then they are exempt from that levy. And the cost of establishing those accounts are several hundred dollars for an entire employer per year for all employees, for as many as you have. So that also helps make this more business friendly. Next page, page 9, deals with some of the provisions that we added to this bill as a flip side of the individual mandate in the legislation. This requires that a bill not deny anyone coverage who seeks coverage through the clearinghouse framework. It, again, allows different financial criteria, but does not allow a pre-existing condition limitation to extend for more than 1 year. And if it does, if there is a pre-existing condition limitation, a plan is required to give credit for prior coverage. So if you are leaving a great state job and don't want to buy COBRA, you can then jump in and buy a new plan and have it be continuous straight through. I don't know how we're doing on time, but page 10 deals with the healthcare fund. Funds will come from a variety of sources. There's a provision on page 11, line 5, disputes and appeals. Basically, if someone feels like this plan is not suiting their needs, they can jump in and have a right to a hearing. Page 11, also on the reporting section, provides a variety of different things the board must come to the legislature and to other entities about, giving recommendations about the plan. And then there's some regulation provisions. Regulations can be implemented to establish this. And that's pretty much an overview of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Modrow. I appreciate your concise and very thorough analysis. I understand there's only one person here that wants to speak. That's Beverly Smith. We do have your written testimony, if that's acceptable.
I would be available next, if you're going to take this bill next time, I'm available to come and answer questions.
Yeah, I think that would be satisfactory. We will adjourn Senate Labor and Commerce right now because I do have a meeting. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know, in the event that you didn't want to have to come back, we do have your testimony. Senator French, thank you for getting Senate Bill 61 before this committee, and we will continue to address it soon.
Thanks for making time for us, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
All right, thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Good job.